This podcast is a part of CGN Media, a podcast network that points to Christ. We are supported by listeners like you. To help us create more great shows, visit cgnmedia.org/support.
Hey, we wanted to share some recent content with you from our 2022 When She Leads conference, where our theme was Breaking New Ground, taken from Hosea 10:12. Here is one of our breakout sessions.
Okay, hi everybody. Hello. Hi. My name's Ashley. It's just about 11:30. Hopefully everyone's made it in here. I heard the bathroom.
I heard the line was long.
Us ladies. I'm Ashley. I'm really excited to talk to you guys about this today. It's been very insightful for myself to learn, and I feel like I've learned a lot of new things from being able to study for this workshop. And it's just nice to see faces to it. I was just telling the girls in the back, like, sometimes when I'm just by myself with all these thoughts, I have so many things that I want to say, but then seeing people to actually talk to is, like, calming. So it's really nice to see you guys. Let's just pray really fast, because I still get nervous. So, dear Lord, we just commit this time into your hands. Thank you for just bringing each and every person here, and I just pray you would give us open hearts just to hear what you have for us. Thank you for speaking the things into my life. And so I just pray that they would be encouraging to everybody here and the future people to hear it. So we love you and just pray that you would meet us now. So we are going to be talking about paving the way, how to reach Gen Z. So basically all of the younger people of today. We'll get some factual things, some charts and percentages and all that. But then we're just going to kind of focus in on what I feel like the Lord's really kind of given me to share with you guys. These are some of the youth kids that I get to hang out with. My husband serves as a high school pastor. I see middle schoolers too, but I'm more geared towards high schoolers because middle schoolers have a lot of energy. Sometimes I'm a little scared by them. But I love all youth, honestly, but especially high schoolers. And so these are some of the beautiful things that I get to see. Anyways, about me, I'm 26 years old. I don't know how to cancel out of this presentation, so let's just retry it. I'm 26, and I'm married to a guy named Levi, who is just the best. I'm really blessed by him. We met at the Bible College in Marietta, right down here, but no longer exists, sadly. Is in the mountains now, and I have been working in youth ministry for about like almost 6 or 7 years. I started in a program that's called On the Edge, which was a 5-week youth discipleship program that really was the first thing. I'm trying to do many things at once, sorry. Let's see if it works. We'll just unplug it. But it was a 5-week discipleship program that really changed my whole view on youth. We got to have kids kind of all backgrounds come. Oh, there it is. This is Levi. And so I started doing that and was able to kind of learn what discipleship looked like in young people's lives. And it's really humorous, honestly, because I never thought that I would like high school. When I was in high school, I didn't like high school. And I felt like I didn't relate to like anybody in high school. And so I never imagined myself having the love for them, but then the Lord kind of just lovingly shoved me into that area, and I was kind of just thrown into it. And so then he just kind of started slowly working in my heart to just grow love for them, because it's such a pivotal time of life. And then I've been married for like about 2.5 years. That's my dog, Bear, at the other side. I also love him a lot. And then I really like coffee. So if you didn't see, we had the coffee cart. That's like part of what I love. We do that at our church, and I've been working in coffee for a couple of years. And then I also love outdoors and camping. This is one of my favorite places. I've gone at the Grand Teton National Park. Has anybody been there? Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's like, it's not even a real place in my mind until I actually go there. And so the first thing that I wanted to kind of do, just to get our brain thinking, it's going to be like a little bit interactive, so sorry if that's out of your comfort zone, but it's good. And so the first thing that I want to do is to take a second to remember. And so what I'm meaning in this is the best advice I've ever heard about being in youth ministry has been to take a step back and to reflect on what you remember life was like at that stage, because most of our life is not there. Most of our life is into adulthood, becoming like in your career, becoming a wife, becoming a mom, all those things. So it's so easy for us to forget when you're a teenager how your world is, and then it leads to just kind of, sometimes we can easily misunderstand where people are at because we don't remember. And so I just wanted you guys to take a couple of minutes, you know, in your heads, just remember, like, what are some things that bring you back? Like, when you think of being a teenager, like, what kinds of fears, what kinds of emotions did you have? All the drama, you know, especially girls, there's just drama being in high school. You know, what kinds of things do you remember? And then I kind of want to chat about it a little bit. So if things come to mind, love if you guys would, like, say it out loud, and then we can kind of go off of each other. Trying to fit in, insecurities.
Trying to be liked.
Yes.
Yeah. Approval.
Approval.
Family drama.
Mm-hmm.
Social connection,
yeah.
Bad choices.
I think we can all agree. Even when you're striving to follow Jesus, there's still bad choices.
Confusion about the future.
Boys.
Loneliness.
Yes.
Loneliness.
Yeah, these are all good. And so why I ask us to remember that is because in the Bible, remember, if you look it up, it's actually repeated 240 times in the Bible. And that's a lot, honestly. And so for us to take a moment to remember, I think is so important in being able to reach maybe your own teens or teens you know or just young people that are in your life. And we see God say it in Deuteronomy. He's constantly telling Israel, remember all that I've done for you. Remember the wilderness. Remember to look back on those times so that you don't forget and do the same things. He tells us to remember Jesus in communion, and we do that so that we can remember the price that he paid for us. In the Psalms, David is constantly saying to remember God's works and deeds, and then remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. So there's all these ideas and representations of remembrance, and I think that going into what we're going to talk about, that is going to be the foundation for kind of what we discuss. And so with that in mind, we'll just kind of briefly go over generations. So there's this whole thing of generational studies that goes on. It's been happening for a long time, and there's a bunch of research and different companies and organizations who do a lot of research and surveys into getting this information. And so a generation, basically, it just refers to all the people born and living at about the same time, regarded collectively, and can be described as the average period, generally considered to be between 20 to 30 years, just as people are born and maturing into life. And so that's kind of what a generation is in general. And that happens, people do this just because it helps point people towards where society is going and what influences are coming, and they're able to kind of gauge, like, okay, so from these trends, what can we see is changing? And it's not just Christians that want to keep up with it, it's like the world, which is really interesting. And so I think it would only make sense that we too also keep up with that. And so then we're going to do a fun little task. I don't know how many of you will love this because it might display your age, so I'm really sorry. But basically, I don't think anybody's here, so I basically just want to kind of read the room and see. Okay, so these are the different names for the different generations and the time frames of when people are born. And so do we have any boomers?
Yeah.
Any boomers?
Yeah.
Ooh, nice. Okay, what about Gen X? That's going to be 39, 54. Okay, awesome. And then millennials?
That would be me.
Okay, cool. And then Gen Z. Is anybody Gen Z? Kind of.
No, I'm in the middle.
Okay. Yeah, I was on that cusp too. I was like the year that they were deciding which, and I was like kind of excited that I was in the millennial one. And then I was like, oh, yeah, but I could see both. Okay, cool. So we kind of have a mix, which is really awesome. Do you guys want to take a picture of this? Sorry, I'll wait if you want. I should have also set myself a timer, so I'll just do that while you're taking a picture. Okay, so with that, this is just going to be a general idea. I'm not going to go through all of this. This is taken from more of like a career-driven research center, but I think it just gives really good facts about the different generations. The years might be a little off. The weird thing about generation studies is that everyone kind of has mixed views on what years really fit in. But I think, like, ultimately it's just like, I mean, it's not really about it perfectly fitting into it, just getting the general idea. And so these kind of just give different things. I think the formative experiences one at the top is really important because those are things in the culture that are shaping what people are deciding or their fears are driven by. So I know, like, for Gen X, it was, for baby boomers, a lot of it was, like, post-war. And so they were being raised by parents who had been in war, and that affects everybody. I know for, like, our generation, or for my generation, millennials, like, after 9/11 happened, that really changed the future for a lot of different things and instilled fear in people in different ways. And so those are really good things to look into. And then the percent of global population is pretty crazy because it just, like, increases. And so now Gen Z is actually the biggest percentage of the world's population, which is really crazy. And so that's why it's really important that we can figure out how to reach them.
Yeah.
And then aspirations, those are just things that they're driven by, why they do the things that they do. And then it goes into kind of like technology, career, how they communicate. And so obviously those have all evolved. Communication has evolved so much in the last like 40 to 50 years. And so obviously those things are going to be affecting the different generations.
Ashley?
And, yes?
Can I ask you to read that top on the Gen Z? Because we're back here.
Oh, yeah, the formative experiences one.
The top part I can't read.
Oh, yeah. So it talks about economic downturn, global warming, which I will say is huge. I feel like all of the teenagers are like, we need to stop global warming. Global focus, mobile devices, energy crisis. Some of these I honestly like, don't know. Like Arab Spring, I'm not sure what that is. Produce own media, cloud computing, and WikiLeaks. That is really small. Yeah, so like a lot of like cyber stuff, I guess, which is kind of still foreign to me. I'm like, okay. Yeah, and so I can always, too, if anybody wants any of these, like have them on. I can like send them to you so you can have the photo for yourself. We can do that after. Cool. So that's kind of explaining it generally. But now Gen Z. So they make up over 30% of the world, which is really crazy. And so Pew Research Center is one of the organizations that do a bunch of research. And this is a quote from this was kind of taken from a while ago, so they weren't sure when millennials were going to end, so they were kind of talking about moving forward in that. So it says, regardless of where and when the line is drawn to end the millennial generation, it will take several years before enough post-millennials have reached adulthood to allow for meaningful statements about the next adult generation. One thing is clear, the next generation, today's children and teens, so Gen Z, will likely be shaped by very different influences and forces than the generations that preceded it. And I think that is absolutely true. And so in line of like kind of remembering what we talked about, like think about the things that were shaping you, and then we're going to talk about these influences that are now shaping Gen Z. And so obviously these are not everything. There could be a million things. But I took, I think, some of the most influential things that I see personally impacting the kids that I serve with, but then also, I mean, I can even see it in myself and in my siblings and all of that. So I'll just kind of briefly go through the list because we could talk about all these things forever. But first I would say is phones. We all know, like, phones have taken over. We always have them. We carry them on us. Their accessibility to to anything at any time. And so that's obviously going to be a huge influence in the teens' lives. Marriage. So not only is that starting to look differently, whether that mean like legally or whatever, but I would say that the divorce rates comparatively to older generations is skyrocketed. I would say personally at our church, I know every church is different, but I would say that probably over half of the kids have single parents, divorced parents, blended families, or just honestly some really crummy home lives. And it's honestly heartbreaking because you can't do anything about it, and so you just have to love them through it. But like you said, family drama. When you're a teenager, you can't escape it. You're in it. And so that is seriously influencing the way that they see life. Next is sexuality. And so obviously we know that it's just becoming more and more open, which I think is, it was just bound to happen in the society we live in. We can't ignore it, but we can only learn how to maneuver and have conversations, healthy conversations with the kids about it, because if they don't hear it from us, they're going to hear about it from their friends at school and maybe even family members that they know. And so learning how to navigate those things. Social media, I do that apart from phones because you can have a phone, but social media kind of is leading the way to their ideas of what life should look like, or it can just be really consuming. You can just get caught up with, you know, posting things or feeling the like of, oh, all these people are following me or watching me, or putting up a life that's totally different than what you actually are feeling on the inside. This next one's going to be knowledge and information. So the amount of information that everybody is accessible to, but especially for young people, if any question pops up in your mind, you can just Google it. And then all of these things come up, but you're not in control of what comes up and what you read. And actually, it's pretty crazy because my husband and I were listening to something, and or we were watching a show or something, and somebody was saying, you can find any group that will accept you for whatever you have, even if it's like usually not socially the norm, you'll find something on the internet that will tell you like, no, it's okay, everyone else is wrong. It's like you should be happy with whatever you're deciding. And so it's pretty crazy just the amount of like accessibility they have those things. But also in turn, I think it's a healthy challenge for us to realize that we have to meet them where they know a lot of things and have researched and feel like, why don't you understand this? Then that's where we can come alongside and kind of accept the challenge and be like, okay, I need to research more and I need to find out this information. This next one is school shootings. I put that only because there's so many other things that could happen, but I think that, I mean, I just, when I was in school, it wasn't a thought, to be completely honest. And I'm sure for a lot of you guys, you would never think like, oh, this could happen. But it's so common now that there really is, I mean, they have drills now for school shooting practices. And I'm like, I remember a fire drill, but I, you know, like, so it's just a totally different reality. And really is like, that's just traumatizing if you experience it. There's so many kids who have. And for parents to go through that and not know, like, how to feel about dropping their kids off. There's just so much to that. And so I thought that was a really big deal. This next one is diversity. So this upcoming generation is actually one of the most diverse in every ethnicity, every blend of ethnicity, which is a beautiful thing. And I think that they are so open to just the diversity of the world, and it's really an amazing thing. But that, you know, that comes with being able to understand some differences, and I think that's a really positive thing for this generation because they are very open and willing to be able to understand where people are coming from or different cultures. And then COVID, obviously, is the thing that really affected them. I mean, imagine being in your school year and all of a sudden it's shut down and you just have to be home, which some people liked. I know there were some kids that were like, this is awesome. Like, I want to be home all the time. So I get that, but I think still, I've seen so much emotional and social decline in maturity from COVID, and it's been really interesting, even for myself, to try to navigate as a leader. Like, some of the younger kids, like freshmen, incoming freshmen and sophomores, it's been really hard to get them to want to, like, communicate or to even be in a room with their peers and not feel social anxiety. And that's been an interesting thing to maneuver, because I've never personally experienced having, like, social anxiety, but that's such a common thing now, especially with COVID happening and then world just shutting down on them. And I feel like it was hard for adults. And so imagine being a kid and you're, like, even less in control and you just kind of have to go along with it. And then it just brought in so many other things for kids too. And then this top left one, or right on the side, is social justice. I think that's probably one of the most passionate things that I see teens being passionate about, is just they want justice for things, and it's in good ways. Sometimes maybe they can't understand fully the things that they're fighting for, just because they're learning and growing and maturing. And so I think this is a really awesome thing. It's just a good, we have to have conversations about it. I think adults really need to just be able to comprehend, like, their passion for this, but then in a point them in a healthy way. But that's a huge thing. And then lastly is media of, like, movies, television, all of that. Those are, like, the things that are setting society the standards for it, and what people are liking and what they're seeing and wanting to aspire to be, in both good and bad ways. There's some shows that exist that I'm like, oh, this should not be a show. Like, or just, you know, just different things. Like, even a lot of the things about, there's, like, a lot of documentary series that are coming out, like, about Jeffrey Dahmer or different things. And, you know, it's like, maybe it's interesting to learn about, but is it really, that's what's being filled in their minds. And they're, you know, especially as Kelly was talking about, like, when we're talking about unchurched teens and teens that are not experiencing healthy family lives and healthy balances and people coming and trying to give them healthy boundaries, those are the things that they're being exposed to, and we can't blame them for that, but that's just the way of the world right now. And so that's another thing to really think about. And so all of those things that I think are kind of driving the culture, and, you know, how different are those compared to the things that you were experiencing? You know, but every generation has things that I'm sure you look back on and you're like, whoa, I can't believe that this was, like, what I was doing or what I was a part of. And that's just kind of the reality for the kids today. And so I just kind of want to talk about this idea with that. So there's this book that I was reading. There's a few books that I have recommended for this workshop, and one of them is called iGen by Jean M. Twenge. And she talks about just how generations, a lot of times people will ask her, she's like, oh, when you do this, like, isn't it the parents' fault that the kids are this way? Or, like, people are looking for somebody to blame. And I really, this was a very big, I think, turning point for me, because in the last year and a half, I've been at a church, like, serving in high school ministry, and there's been times where I found myself feeling really frustrated with them, because I just cannot understand the things that they're going through or the things that they're interested in. And sometimes it has felt like this tug of war of, like, oh, but, like, you know, you just want someone to blame about something, or, like, you want a reason to be like, why is it this way? But she talks about how it's better to see the gray areas and the trade-offs as generations are changing. And using words such as fault or blame doesn't really make sense. And it's also counterproductive, because it leaves us squabbling about who to blame rather than understanding the trends, both good and bad. Cultures change and generations change with them. And that's the important point. The culture has changed and we're all in this together. And so she kind of brings in this idea of this gray area where sometimes things feel a little unknown. Maybe you're uncertain about, like, what to say or where to go in a conversation when they're talking to you about things that you've maybe never thought of, or you don't know what you think about it. And I thought it was really cool because I started reading another book called A Non-Anxious Presence, which I would really recommend, by Mark Sayers. And it's basically a book on how a changing and complex world will create a remnant of renewed Christian leaders. And that's why we're here, because we're, you know, trying to renew ourselves as leaders and see what God wants to do. And he also talks about this idea of a gray zone. And so in post-World War II, there was just a lot of countries and cultures that were coming and trying to pick up the rubbles of what had just happened. And so he follows this story of a movie called The Third Man. And it basically is this movie and about a guy who's trying to make a life for himself again in the midst of Vienna post-World War II. So he's just feeling at a loss, and nothing's the same, and everything's confusing, it's been corrupted, everyone's changed. And he brings this idea of a gray zone, where it feels like it's this transitional space where nothing is black and white, but everything's disorienting and confusing. And Mark Sayers goes on to say that, I think I have his quote, yeah, that gray zones offer a blank canvas for God to paint a new story. We must see it not as a disaster, but as an opportunity for rebirth, renewal, and revival. And I think that, honestly, in the shift of this generation, I think that's kind of where it's at. It's a lot of things changing, and I think it goes along with the whole conference of breaking up the fallow ground and kind of moving to new things that the Lord has. And I think this is such a perfect way, as he says, to have a blank canvas to move forward in ways that maybe we wouldn't have thought, and maybe reaching kids in different ways. I loved that Kelly Bell was talking about how we have to go out and outside of the church, and we have to really be intentional about that, because I think that within this generation, they're not just gonna come to you. They're being raised a lot of times by the people who have been hurt by churches or who have seen the hypocrisy. And so a lot of this generation is actually gonna be unchurched, and there's actually this this idea of that it's called the religious belief of like nuns. So when not N-U-N-S, but N-O-N-E-S. And so people, when they're asked, what do you believe? People are saying, oh, I believe in nothing. And so that's becoming the second leading religious belief in the world right now. And so I think that with what she was saying, that so ties into reaching this generation, because I think we are going to have to go out and really pursue them in a different way. And I think that the Lord is using this time frame, especially the last couple of years, to prepare just like a newness to be able to do that. And then I kind of want to talk about going in with that thought into this idea of kind of the wilderness, but in a sense of how sometimes we can misunderstand because we are not exactly at the same place as these teens are right now, and how we can work through that and the Lord can use it. And so he says here in the scriptures, this is the same guy that wrote A Non-Anxious Presence. It says, in the scriptures, the wilderness, that challenging and chaotic place, is transformed into an arena of spiritual growth where leaders encounter the presence of God and become non-anxious presences in an anxious world. And like she said, anxiety is like the leading highlight of our culture right now. And I would say that most people feel anxiety. But I think it's interesting that it says in the wilderness. So there's this gray area where there's transition and it's chaos. But I think that gray area, we can see it in the word where, or in the Bible, how it's like the wilderness. Like we saw the Israelites roaming in the wilderness. Everything was chaos. Everything was a mess. And I went through a study by Lauren Chandler called With Us in the Wilderness that went through the book of Numbers. And in Numbers chapter 32, there's this story. I'm not going to read it. I'll just kind of describe it to you guys. But basically, the tribes of Reuben and Gad, they had many livestock. So there was like a bunch of cattle. They had a big family in all these tribes, and they're like massive. And so where the Israelites are at in this point of the book is that all of their parents and all their grandparents have passed. They all went through the desert for 40 years, and the new generation is coming in to play, and they're gonna go into the promised land. And so they've been wandering for all these years. Moses is still there, and he's like wondering, when is this gonna happen? And so the tribes of Reuben and Gad see that they have many livestock, And they see that the land that they're at is suitable for their needs and what they have. And so they go to Moses and the leaders, and they bring it to him and say, hey, like, this land is exactly what we would need and for our people, and we're wondering if we can stay in this place. And Moses, because of all of the trials and the errors and the sin and the hurts that he's experienced, he kind of freaks out at them a little bit. And he's like, are you trying to be like your parents again, who disobeyed the Lord and made us wander through the desert for 40 years? And he just lets it all out. He unleashes it on them. And then he accuses them. So imagine, like, being in that position. They got the courage to ask him and to bring it forward, but then he just shuts them down, accuses them of wanting to disobey. And then the tribes communicate to Moses, no, we actually just want this land because we see that God has provided it for us and it's fruitful for what we have, but we will still go and fight with the people. And so Moses basically comes up with this deal, like, okay, if you go and fight with Israel and you still do your part to follow the Lord and obey him, then you can have the land that's given to you here, and that will be okay and not disobedient. And so that plays out, and they do that, and they get the land. And in her book, she was talking about how Moses was misunderstanding what they were saying, and they simply just wanted something that was different, but not necessarily disobedient to God. So maybe it, you know, looked for Moses, he's like freaking out because he's like, no, it's the promised land. Like, this is what we were supposed to have this whole time. But for these people, they were still willing to go and fight for their people. They still wanted to honor the Lord, but it just looked a little bit different. And different is okay. And I think that's, like, the hard part sometimes for us, is that we see things changing and shifting, and it's our natural instinct to just be like, no, but this worked before. Why would we change it, you know? And I found that in my life, like, starting to serve at a new church in the last year and a half, there's been a lot of times where I've been tempted to say, like, oh, no, but this worked when I did youth ministry, like, that many years ago, or, like, with this kid who's experiencing the same thing as this kid, like, this worked. But that's not always the case, and we have to be open to what the Lord wants to do that's different, and we have to be okay with different. And I think of that scripture that Paul says in 1 Corinthians, how he says he became all things to all men so that the gospel would save people. And I think that's what we have to be open to, especially as Christian leaders, because if we're not open to that change, but the world is changing and they're open to it, then we're going to lose so many souls for the gospel if we're not willing to do that. And I think I have on the next slide. Oh, that's Numbers 32. And so I wanted to highlight that. The gospel never changes, but culture does, which means the people we are reaching are going to change. And I think that we have to keep that. Because even in 20 years, when I'm, like, in my 40s, I'm going to have to remember this. It's not just for right now. Culture's always going to be changing, and we always have to be open to what God wants to do that's new. And are we willing to ebb and flow with those changes to further the gospel? Because that's what it's about. And I wanted to just touch on that a little bit. So in another book I read called Meet Gen Z, which this one I would highly recommend. The iGen book was more of a factual, like, science-based, kind of, like, surveyed book. But Meet Gen Z is actually, he's a Christian author, and it was extremely insightful into learning about this, and he just has such good vision for reaching the next generation. And so he said, our approaches to evangelism used in the past must be ruthlessly reevaluated in light of the nature of post-Christian culture and the generation it has spawned. And so we have to remember that people, I wish it was true that we were going more towards godliness as a culture, but we're not. We're just continuing to go further. And so I think our approaches, even as Kelly was saying, which I thought was so cool, I feel like she laid the foundation, honestly, for this workshop, is just, it looks different. Maybe what worked 20 years ago and having these big events and everybody just flocking to them was gonna work, but I really think that it looks really different now. And I think that, you know, there has been a lot of sin that has been exposed in people's lives, and so people have seen that, and they're like, oh, why are Christians different if this is what happens to them. And so we have to be willing to own up to those things, but we have to be willing to see, like, okay, what can we do differently to reach this generation? And even with the verse, breaking new ground, like, what areas in your guys' church or ministry or lives or with your children, like, what are ways that God wants to break new ground to be able to reach them in a way that looks different? But basically, I jotted down a couple of how-tos because I want to have practical application to this. And so, basically, you know, there's so many things you could come up with. Like Kelly was saying, there could be a list of things and ideas. But what I've really seen with building relationships with people that are young right now, I would say the first thing is listen. I think that they so badly want to be heard, but not in a way where you just hear them and then it's like, okay, cool, and then you start talking. Like, to really actively listen to them, because what they're telling you is really what, if you can get them to tell you like what's really going on in their heart, those are the things that matter to them. And if you can take those and really prayerfully be intentional with them, then they're gonna see that you actually care. And I think that's probably the biggest thing, is just showing them that you care. Because so many times, I just feel like, you know, they go to school, or especially in families, kids don't, when they don't feel heard, they're just kind of like, oh, well, it doesn't matter what I say because no one's actually listening. And so I think we need to be active listeners in their lives. I said be real just because, like Kelly was saying, there's just so much fakeness that has come from the church, and we just need to be a culture that sets just being real and honest and raw. And sometimes that looks different. Sometimes, like, somebody might want to know all about your life, and maybe they don't need to, so you have to figure out, like, the boundaries, you know. But just being honest with them, and that's why I think remembering is huge, because you can go back and remember what it was like when, you know, you were a teenager and you were faced with having to make a decision. And then you can actually take that moment to be like, yeah, that was really hard, and then be honest with them about it. And then let them lead, I think, is a huge thing. I think that people really undermine how much young people can do, and just the drive that they have to get things done and the passions that they do have. I think sometimes we can misunderstand them in that sense. And so a practical way that I've seen this worked out with my friends' youth groups or with our high school ministry is that we have student leadership. And so we are raising them to be poured into, to learn how to lead and what that looks like, and holding them accountable to, you know, just living in a way that obviously we want to, like, help them to live godly. But then also just giving them opportunities to just be able to make decisions and pour into, especially within youth groups, like, it's their youth group, even though we're leading it and God's given it to us, like, it's their youth group that they're going to invite their friends to. And so we have to remember that. And so we want them to be able to be a part of the decision making in a sense, like, obviously with guidance and wisdom. But it's really cool when you get to see the students that are attending actually step forward and take the lead. And I know even here at Reliance, they do like a student Sunday. What's it called? Youth Sunday, where the youth take over on a Sunday service. I think that's awesome. We're like trying to get there. Because I think that's so neat that they can feel empowered to be able to do that. And especially in church, because they're going to remember that, and then it's going to become their church. I think that's a huge thing with youth. If it doesn't feel like the big church is their church, that's why so many teenagers, once they leave, they just don't go to church, because they're like, oh, well, it was just youth group for me, or it was like very separated. But we have to kind of find the balance of the two. And then go to them, that kind of is talking about, like, we need to be reaching out and actually going to them. And how I've seen that in this community specifically is through an organization called Student Venture. And so there are clubs all over the schools in this area. I don't know, I think it might just be in this valley, but I know there's like Fellowship of the Christian Athletes and different Bible studies that take place at schools. But that, my husband has been a part of that since we've gotten here, and he's in like 3 high schools now. And it's really neat because he'll just like have pizza and walk during lunch. And sometimes kids will just like go in the student venture and hear the Bible study because there's pizza. And then they get to hear the gospel and they get to be loved on. And even if, like, they don't go to church one day, like, they'll always remember that. And that's, like, in a school setting, you know? And so I think it's really cool for things like that to happen. And you get to see, like, he gets to see the kids that he's reaching, like, multiple times a week in different settings, too. And something he always says is, man, I think if I had the idea that, like, my youth pastor would have come to school, I would have, like, had a little bit of fear instilled in me almost of like, oh wow, like my life here actually matters. And then share your life, obviously with wisdom, but I do think sharing your life in the sense of just opening up like your home, opening up just your time and being willing to actually like have them be a part of your life is a huge thing. We try to do, the last Friday of every month, we have like a high school hangout so that we're doing something outside of church so that it's not just all of the memories formed in a church building. And so we've had them over our house before. We're going to a pumpkin patch next week. Is Friday? Yeah. And then, you know, so we've just done a bunch of different things. And I think that ties into just having fun. I think if we're not willing to have fun as a church with people and for memories in that ways, like, the world's gonna have so many fun things. Like, so we have to have things, especially for teens, you know, they're looking to have a fun time. They're full of energy. They want to make friendships. They, you know, have all these ideas of what they think being a teenager looks like. And so we just have to have fun. And honestly, the church that I've been a part of in the last year and a half has really helped me adopt that idea because I'm a pretty, like, I could just, you know, I just kind of box a little bit and I like to have fun, but I haven't seen that in church a whole lot, honestly. And so I feel like my church has really helped me to grow to see, like, no, that's important. Just to, like, let loose and let these kids have a good time where they're still getting the gospel. But then just, like, having fun and making memories in that way is so important. Because when you think of high school, I feel like that's what you think of. The memories with your friends that are just, like, you talk about for years to come. And so we want to have that within church, too. And then ask them questions. I think that's huge. I think, you know, if we don't understand something, being honest with them and being like, why is it this way? I've had to ask the kids so many times. They'll say phrases that I'm like, I've never heard of this. Like, what is this? Because it's just changing so quickly now. And that's, like, why social media is a huge thing. Because it's influencing just language in general. Or even just, like, different mental health words. Like, the word trigger. Like, when I was a kid, I never used that word. I'm like, what? Like, why do we use that word? But that's just what they use to, you know where you're going when you have a word like that. And so I feel like asking questions is huge. Because how else will we learn if we don't ask questions? And then just being honest with them. Whether that's when you don't know an answer to something. And you're like, I need to think about this. Or I need to, like, look into this. And then being honest with even just, like, where you're at in life, too. I think they're just really looking for people to be vulnerable with them. Because it's such a vulnerable time. And then find the balance of friend and leader. I've heard some, like, horror stories from some kids. I work with a bunch of Gen Z people but they're, like, 20. And one girl actually told me that the church she was going to, she wished that her pastor would have been more of a leader because she felt like in his messages he was being so friend-driven that it was almost, like, no difference. And she was like, honestly, I wasn't looking for that. I was looking for, like, somebody to teach me the truth and to be a leader. And so even hearing that, I was like, wow. So they are thinking about these things. So just finding that balance. And then this is a huge one for me that I've really had to learn, is giving the benefit of the doubt. I think it's easy for us to just go to, like, well, at least for me, I go to worst case scenario. And I'm like, oh, so if you're doing that means you're doing this. And then this is involved. And then I'm, like, freaking out. And then really when I just have a conversation and I ask the questions and I'm like, okay, so what, like, led you to make this decision, or what are you thinking about this? Half the time, it's, like, not even a big deal. I'll tell you a really funny story, actually. So the discipleship program I was a part of was, like, pretty intense. We dealt with some pretty heavy, heavy issues of sin, which was good. We were working through those. So I go to camp this last year, and I had heard the girls, they were up all night, which I'm fine with. I'm like, I want you guys to have fun. So at one point in the night, I hear them in the bathroom. I'm laying there in my bed. The door to the bathroom is right by me. So I'm like, you guys are, like, come on, I'm going to hear you. So I'm laying there and I'm like, I should probably go check on them. But in my mind, I go to worst case scenario. I'm like, oh my gosh, like they could be doing drugs. They could be doing these. I'm like, what is it? I'm preparing myself for worst case scenario. So I get up, I go into the bathroom and I open the door and they're all in the corner and they just have balloons. And they're blowing balloons up. And they look so freaked out. And I was like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we just thought it'd be funny to blow balloons up and put them in the bathroom for everyone in the morning. And I was like, honestly, thank God for you guys. Because here I am like, oh my gosh, they have to be sinning. Like something else. But they were just pranking their friends. And it was such a like enlightening moment for me because I was like, man, I'm so quick to just think the worst. But so many times, like, even if it is the worst, there's so much more behind what's actually going on. And so, yeah, that was a really good, funny tagline for me in moment. So what I want to end with is just, you know, with all of those things, when I think about reaching this generation, I just think about Jesus and how he looked on the crowds and he had compassion on them because this version, I think, is the NIV. It says, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And so when we look on this generation, you know, we just want to have compassion. We want to be able to see them for who they are, not for who we maybe want them to be, but just as they are, and we want to have compassion on them. And I can tell you that the harvest is plentiful because in our valley alone, there's like literally thousands of high schoolers. Since my husband has gone to the different schools, he said that the first day he worked on the campus, he was like, I can't believe how many teenagers we're not reaching because there's just so many. And yet the workers are few. I can attest to that because finding youth leaders is not always the easiest thing. And finding just people who love youth is a hard thing to come by, but I'm hoping that out of this workshop, you guys can gain just the love for them and go and bring that to whoever you know and share that, because I think if people, you know, there's so many times when I tell people, or like people ask me like, oh, what does your husband do? And, oh, he's a high school pastor. And they're like, oh, that's good for you. God bless you. I could never do that. And I laugh, you know, but like in reality, I think a lot of people feel that way. And I don't know if it's like they're intimidated. Maybe they don't know how to handle like the awkwardness of teenage years or whatever it may be. But I think if we don't shift our mindset from having that response to like, yeah, you're right. Like this is the future generation. These are the people who are shaping the world. This is where we're going. Then we're going to miss a whole movement of people, and then our culture is just going to go farther away from what the gospel says. And so lastly, there's just this one quote that I wanted to read. In that same book, Meet Gen Z, he ends his book with this very passionate, just, I guess, encouragement. It sounds a little different than an encouragement, but he talks about how he, when he sees Christian leaders, all Christian leaders, you know, they have the good qualities of being holy and, you know, kind and wanting to love people. But he says, which this is a little counter, yeah, it's just different than what we would probably think, but he says that he wishes that leaders would actually be more aggressive, and not in a negative way, but aggressive in the way that they want to make things happen, they want to be catalysts for change, take charge in battle, and maybe upset the status quo, are backboned and competitive athletes for God's kingdom. And he talks about this quote from Michael Jordan that he has in his office, and the quote is, "It is a rare person who comes along and raises the standards of excellence, who captures the hearts of many, and who inspires a group of individuals to achieve the impossible." And he ends the whole book with saying, "May that kind of aggression mark us. It may just inspire the church to reach the next generation."
Yeah.
And when I read that, I was like honestly in tears because I was like, that's so true. That's what we want to be known for. And I pray that in whatever way that looks for you guys, that it would be the same. And so let's just pray for that now. Dear God, we just thank you for this time. And I pray that you would just help us to think on these things and to really remember just the times where we had to make really tough decisions and think through a lot of things and feel all the emotions. And it doesn't really change in life that much sometimes, but it's such a unique time of life to be young, and especially in this culture. And so I pray that for all of these women, God, in whatever ways that they can take this and just walk it out and just use these things to minister to people, or whether it's their own leadership or their kids or the young people in their lives, I pray that you would just allow them to do that. And I thank you for just the compassion you have for us and on the crowds of people, even when we maybe don't understand or feel confused by God, but you know that we know that you just love, and so we just want to be loving people that just push for the gospel, because that's what it's about. It's just about seeing people come from darkness into light. And so let us be the people that bear that light, God. So we just love you. Thank you so much for this time and for this conference, and we just ask that you would do work in this generation. We love you.
Well, thanks for joining us today. We hope you find this content helpful. Hey, stay connected with us on Instagram and Facebook for all that is going on with When She Leaves. Hey, save the date, October 20th and 21st of 2023, as we have scheduled our big annual live event. We're going to be gathering, and details will be coming out. And so I just want you to be able to pop that date on your calendar for now and plan on bringing your ministry teams out for a weekend of refreshing, training, and connecting with one another. This year, our guest speaker will be Ruth Jo Simons. If you have not met Ruth yet, she's fantastic. Look her up on Instagram. She's an artist. She writes Bible studies. She's been a pastor's wife. We've had her out. She's fantastic. So join us for that. We'll see you next time.